Today's guest, Gigi Ho, Vice President Operations at Sima Data.
The conversation then kind of naturally says, listen, we can help you, you know, create digitized data, but better than that, if you create your data in a standardized format, then we can use that and supply everybody in a consistent manner, and you won't have to, you know, manage data for this person, that person, etc., which is what they have been doing very inefficiently.
Tech Talk, the automotive aftermarket podcast.
Hi and welcome to the third episode of season 2 of our Tech Talk aftermarket podcast. Today we're diving deep into the data topic with Gigi Ho from Sima Data, and I couldn't think of anyone better suited for the topic. Gigi is a real data nerd, so to speak, dealing with aftermarket data nearly all her professional life. We talked about the development towards a digital aftermarket within the last 20 years, why the discussions about data should be more about the actual use cases, the uniqueness of the special equipment sector, the rise of e-commerce and how to deal with it, as well as how electric vehicles will affect the market of specialty parts in the future. Gigi is a real expert and a true advocate of the importance of good data, great insights on Sima and the specialty sector in North America. So without further ado, let's jump right into the podcast. Welcome here from Apex for our next Tech Talk session, and we have a very special guest. We have Gigi Ho from Sima Data, and she's pretty nerdy regarding the data topic. So what she's basically doing is more or less the same as we are doing for a global market, they are doing for the North American market. Gigi, thank you for taking the time and having you here today.
Thank you, Christian.
And for our audience who's not so familiar with the North American market and Sima in general, can you give us a little introduction about yourself, what you are doing and what Sima is?
Absolutely. So again, my name is Gigi Ho, and I am the Vice President of Operations for Sima Data. And Sima Data is a program that is provided to our members, Sima being an association, provide to our members to help the manufacturers create digitized, standardized data and help resellers to connect with those manufacturers and ingest that product information onto their platforms to be able to sell, whether that selling is brick and mortar, on websites, B2B or B2C.
Nice. So these topics all sound familiar, of course, because as I said, we're operating in the same field. So since when did you start dealing with the data topic?
Oh my gosh. So what I didn't do is I didn't explain the difference between Apex and Sima.
Yes. Maybe that would be good for many listeners because, you know, from a European perspective, there's so many associations and organizations in the North American aftermarket. It's quite hard to come by.
Absolutely. So Sima stands for Specialty Equipment Market Association. And what we mean by specialty equipment is really the best way to describe it would be the parts that you want, not the parts that you need, right? So it's the lift kits, the extra bumper, the off-road fenders, the bull guards, lighting, everything that would make a vehicle go faster, sound better, or look better.
So performance and tuning parts.
Correct. Well, beyond performance, also accessory and appearance.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like all the cars we see at the SEMA exhibition.
Correct. Yeah. Actually, all those vehicles that are displayed outside of the SEMA Hall, actually outside and inside the SEMA Halls, are all featured vehicles. So they've all been sponsored to some degree by the manufacturers, exhibitors of the SEMA show. So, you know, these are fabricators, designers, and mechanics that are putting these beautiful vehicles together.
And you really are knowledgeable in the data topic because you told me we had a little chat before and you basically told me that all your professional life you were dealing with aftermarket data.
So not all my professional life, but certainly all my professional automotive life. I came from SAP, actually, as my background. I worked in biotech, but I had a good friend who was in the aftermarket specialty equipment market side, and he asked me to look at the aftermarket as a way to, how do we make it more efficient? This was back in 2001. So I entered the industry in 2001, not even knowing that the aftermarket existed.
It was right in the dot-com craze then.
Correct. Well, actually, it was just at the dot-bomb.
Oh, okay.
It was just at the dot-bomb, and I remember.
And you decided, oh wait, let's do something with data.
Yeah. So let's do something with electronic information through the internet. And I didn't understand, coming from already a high-tech industry and background, coming into an industry that didn't know what internet meant, still printed everything, catalogs,
yes, paper
price
catalogs
sheets, yes, packs and packs, pallets and pallets of paper catalogs would be shipped to the SEMA show by almost every single exhibitor.
Yep.
And it was crazy in my mind to think of that. So at that time, when they thought about electronic data, they thought a PDF was electronic data. To some degree, it was. But they had no idea. And I didn't realize starting the company that I did with my friend Digital. We started Digital Performance back in 2001. I had no idea that for the first 7 to 8 years of my professional career in aftermarket would be evangelizing what standardized
data
means.
You had to do all the groundwork.
I did. I really did. Yeah.
And I guess this is a great accomplishment, because I can imagine that it's quite tough for like a young woman stepping into the aftermarket, which, you know, the aftermarket, we all know it, there are all these silverbacks in there, and they don't want to get taught what to do from a young woman coming from SAP.
Yeah. So I didn't reveal much about my SAP background.
Yeah.
But really, the conversations I have and continue to have with manufacturers isn't about the standards themselves or even about data. It's really more about what they're looking to do with their company, with their products, who their customers are, what their customers are needing. And more often than not, they're needing some type of information electronically to be able to put into their systems, right? So the conversation then kind of naturally says, listen, we can help you, create digitized data. But better than that, if you create your data in a standardized format, then we can use that and supply everybody in a consistent manner. And you won't have to, manage data for this person, that person, et cetera, which is what they have been doing very inefficiently.
Yeah, and I totally agree. When talking to people about data, you don't need to talk about the nitty-gritty details, because no one, A, they don't understand it, B, they don't care, but you need to talk about the advantages they have, because the data is mainly it's just a carrier to fulfill business in the end.
Correct, yeah. So I try to use analogies a lot, because people don't, I think when they, I realize it's part of our program name, SEMA Data, but I think a lot of people get scared by that word. Maybe scared's a little harsh, but they get turned off by the word data when they hear it. They're like, oh, that's not for me, especially...
it's not for me. I want to sell parts, not data.
I'm sorry. Yeah, so these are like marketing and sales managers. They're like, I don't care about data. Oh, you can talk to IT. And I'm like, no, I need to talk to you.
Yes.
I don't care about IT. I start to use analogies, in terms of what it actually means, and then they start to kind of get it. Or what's also helpful is talking to their main customers, and the resellers usually understand the issues and need the information standardized, delivered consistently. And in that respect, the resellers, their customers help me in that conversation as well.
Yeah, definitely. And you also mentioned that analogy before when we had a quick exchange, and I quite liked it, because we were talking about data is like the electricity in your house. You will miss it as soon as it's gone, but usually you don't have to care about it because it's behind the walls.
Correct. Yeah. So, you think of electricity powering your computers or your coffee maker and things like that, and that you turn that over to sales. Data is powering your website, it's powering your business systems, it's powering your point of sale systems.
Yeah.
But you don't think about it because you're selling a part or you're selling a kit or, you know, et cetera. But yeah, once it's gone, you have no idea how difficult your life becomes.
Definitely. And in your opinion, what makes the American aftermarket unique in terms of data?
So when you say aftermarket, I am speaking from specialty side.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the challenges that I see from the specialty side is there's a lot of companies that are still burgeoning and they are creating products in their garage still. These are not necessarily sophisticated manufacturing processes or sophisticated selling processes either. Usually it's the small company, it's the, you know, 5 to 20 people who start off the company and they are doing everything.
Especially in the accessories sector you mentioned.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, for the SEMA market.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're starting off, they have a great product, they hit a small niche.
They've been to the Shark Tank and got the money and now they're coming to you.
They might not even have a shark, they might just, you know... They might just be in a club and, you know, there was a pain and they fix the pain with their part, the solution. And now they want to go broadly or they want to sell into a larger reseller like a Jags or, you know, Summit Racing or Keystone, et cetera. Yeah. And the first conversation from these resellers is, do you have product data? And then... they're like wide-eyed. what does that mean?
Yeah.
I have my price sheet in Excel. Yeah. I was like, no, that's not the same. So yeah, it's that the challenges in the SEMA side are varied in that degree. We have small manufacturers coming in. We have manufacturers growing out of being small per se and trying to sell it into larger markets. Additional challenges go with that beyond just product data, but it's understanding what goes in. And again, kind of this in this podcast, my goal is actually to reach the marketing and sales people of the company. I don't want to talk to any more IT people because they're not the solution provider. They're not the pain point person.
No.
Right. So, As we change the conversation of, you know, standardized data more into the benefits of the result, then I think we can catch more lift. And I've kind of proven that to some degree because when I joined SEMA, I've been in the industry obviously since 2001, but I joined SEMA in 2019. And when I joined, SEMA Data had, I want to say like 200 brands or so that were involved. And obviously these were the larger brands, the Hollies and the Edelbrocks of our market. And today, which is 3 years later, we're over 500 brands.
Wow.
So the messaging to the salespeople and to the marketing people matter, right? Because they're the ones like, oh, I can sell more product with this? Okay.
Yeah.
That's all I needed to know. Oh, I can connect with resellers with this? Okay. That's all I needed to know. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think totally agree that you need to buy in from the sales and marketing people. This is not a topic which should be driven by IT at all. And in regarding this rapid growth of the brands you are mentioning from the last 9 years, within the last 9 years, we also saw the rapid growth in e-commerce. So how does this relate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would also like to credit the growth of our brands within SEMA Data program to the pandemic.
Yeah.
There was one thing that the pandemic proved. It was, you know, previous to 2020, whenever we talked about online, some understood it. And a lot of people said, yeah, that's like a portion of my sales. No one really buys car parts online. No one ever really buy car parts online. I'm like, okay, if that's what you think. And it's like, you know, if you provide enough information and you provide clear images in, you know, the features and benefits and the attributes that are needed for your products, you can probably sell. Like, no, no one really. Our product is too specialty, right? Yeah. We need to have the conversation with the buyer, whatever. And I was like, all right. And then the pandemic happened, and no one traveled. No one could demo products. No one could do any of these things that they used to do as part of their normal business process. And all of a sudden, it was like, oh, shoot. Kind of like the pandemic basically was realizing that you bought a house where in one room or even a whole house didn't have any electricity wired. And they're like, oh, I need this. So that was definitely kind of the birth of a lot of the awareness, all of a sudden, what it really means to have clean content and rich content for your products.
No, definitely, totally agree. But this is also in the discussions we have with customers. Mm-hmm. But having your data ready for e-commerce, and you're having all the, you have your 360-degree photos and everything.
Yeah.
But it's not like you have the data and then it's like it's a one-off, and then I kind of put it into the marketplaces and then I sell. If you want to do e-commerce business, especially on the big platforms like Amazon or eBay in Europe, there's a lot of automotive aftermarket or replacement parts business via eBay. Mm-hmm. You need to treat these platforms seriously, because it's not like your catalog system. It's not like a paper catalog. There's more to it than just setting up your listing. And you need the people who are educated in promoting these listings on those platforms, because you're just one of many sellers there.
Yeah, so I guess we're talking about another aspect of it where, you know, some manufacturers sell direct through those marketplaces.
Yeah.
On our side, a lot of resellers sell direct on those marketplaces. And the resellers need to understand those products better. Some of them are passionate. So there's a lot of passion over on the SEMA side. A lot of the resellers, the brands that they carry on their stores, it's because they're users of those products themselves. So they usually can support the end consumer better because they're a consumer themselves. But data doesn't stop. There's always something that can be enhanced more as the manufacturer and the resellers are involved with the audience. They can pull through what's important to that audience. Like, okay, maybe I listed, you know, three attributes, but they needed this other piece of information, and I didn't have that because I didn't know any better. Well, that needs to be added. That's an enhancement, and it's just a continual refinement of your product information. You can't, this is not a, you know, what they call it, do it and forget it kind of thing.
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. what I mean. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not a do and forget. And it's also interesting that you mentioned the example of a reseller, because on the Amazons and eBays, the lines are getting blurry. You know who is selling you that part. Mm-hmm. Maybe a customer is buying, but the product description is wrong, or the image is wrong, and he gets the wrong part. But mm-hmm. then he's not blaming whoever it sold it to him, because it's actually hard to find out actually who made the sale on these marketplaces.
Yes, yeah. There's a diligence there. So, you know, Amazon is a strange creature, I have to say, because they want rich content, and they actually demand it from a lot of their vendors and merchants. However, if they run across a line that doesn't have the six images, or that doesn't have the, you know, 10 bullet points, I'm not sure of their listing criteria, they will aggregate that information.
Yeah.
So they will modify the listing.
Yeah, they will crawl it from somewhere.
Yeah, so it becomes like somewhat user-generated content instead of manufacturer-specific content. So they don't do that for fitment. They do utilize ASUS as delivered by the manufacturers.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you how many times we have pursued them to work with us on the PIES data, just because it's like, if you need something, let us help communicate that to the manufacturer and let us help the manufacturer, you know, find it, create it, whatever is needed. But you can't be aggregating this information because you're causing, not only, you're causing down the line issues with the returns, unhappiness, brand, loyalties being destroyed. A lot of things are being affected, but they don't care. So we have to get the manufacturers
because
to
also,
care a little
also
bit.
For them, you know, so, and I guess I guess it sounds harsh, but it really is like that, because basically they don't care what they sell. For them, it's product. If it's like a pair of socks or a replacement part, they don't care in the end.
Yeah. Well, and then for them, it's nothing on them, because a lot of the resellers and manufacturers that sell to them have to accept the return.
Yes.
No matter what. And they're already getting their piece out of it with FBA, right? Fulfillment by Amazon. So it leaves a bad experience on the reseller and the manufacturer side. But for Amazon, they've made money both ingress and egress, you know? So it's like they don't care.
Yeah, and also with Amazon, when you get too successful on those platforms, Amazon starts to get in competition with you as well.
Yes,
because then you maybe have your nice little product you developed in your garage, and as soon as it's becoming a hit, maybe they will release it as an Amazon basic product or whatever.
Correct.
And then they are in competition.
Yes, they are. Yeah, they because you're selling on their platform, they collect all your sales information, so they know not only how much you're selling, but which.
To whom?
Demographic you're selling to. Yeah, for sure.
And so how is the general sentiment in the market from the distributors and manufacturers towards these platforms?
So it's a strategy game. So what what parts can you sell on Amazon that is going to be low on the return risk, right?
Yeah.
And knowing at least that the fitment is, provided by the manufacturer and not aggregated, again, what information can be hard and fast that you're delivering that wouldn't open the gate for them to want to aggregate additional information, right? So it's trying to be as thorough as you can so that there's less chance of Amazon kind of meddling with it. But...
So it's a thin line to walk.
It is a very thin line to walk. I think the other aspect of selling with Amazon is you have to know that a lot of the searches are starting at Amazon. But I think there can be a lot of buying on Amazon. There obviously is a lot of buying on Amazon. But depending on the specialty of that product, they can buy direct from your website. I will say that... Oh, I don't have the statistics on the top of my head, but the confidence level of a consumer, especially buying on a specialty product, the confidence level of a consumer purchasing from the manufacturer website or from a specialty website is far greater than on Amazon.
Yes,
most
definitely.
Of the time they're on Amazon because of really the turnaround time. So if you can match that or at least lay the expectation to a reasonable level with the consumer purchasing that product. Okay, you're not going to get this in 2 days, but maybe a week, and it won't be, exorbitant freight. It's an aspect, you've built some pricing into that freight cost. You can deliver, I think, with a relationship with the consumer, you can deliver much a better experience than Amazon. I think they search on Amazon because... They used to search on Google. They still search on Google, but I think that more and more they're searching on the marketplaces for products that are available, and then they shop beyond that.
No, definitely. And in the end, it's not just about pricing. That's what everyone is saying, because many think, but it's e-commerce and I can't compete on price with them, but you don't have to, because it's not solely pricing.
Correct.
It's about having additional services for your customers.
Right. Yeah, providing value. And that's why, with
forming a relationship,
we work with our resellers to encourage them to develop this relationship, whether it be at an event like SEMA show or you know, the multiple consumer events that are out and about. For us, it's like, you know, Jeep Jamboree or, you know, the different off-road expo and different trade or consumer shows that are out there, because it's their opportunity to gain confidence, brand loyalty, and, you know, really demonstrate the features and benefits of their products and not just rely purely on the, you know, on the online experience. Though the online experience can be very informative. I joke around too with my manufacturer. I should say joke. I don't really joke. I'm trying to like paint pictures for them in non-data terms.
Yeah.
But, you know, coming out to SEMA, I had to buy another suitcase.
Yeah.
And I go online and I honestly, I look for demonstration videos, because even with pictures of the suitcase,
you want to get an idea of the height and stuff.
Yeah. I need a person, because sometimes a picture doesn't give you any reference.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Right? So it's how big is that? Especially when
it's on a white background. And
yeah. I have no, it's like, is that an inch high? Is that 10 inches high? I have no idea.
Yeah.
And so I'll read the spec and then I'm trying to imagine it, you know, in with my hands or tape measure and such. But it's a lot easier when I actually just see the person grab the bag. I'm like, okay, that person's about 6 feet tall. You know, they're grabbing the bag, they're zipping it open. I can see everything about it. And so video and demonstrative videos, informative, like teaching type, training type videos. The manufacturers do it for their wholesale dealer partners, but they don't do it for the consumer. I'm like, why not?
Yeah, and especially with the parts you guys are dealing with. Mm-hmm. Because I guess in most of the cases, this would be a DIY project for the one who buys it.
Correct, yes. So, and even if it weren't, if it were one that you would purchase as a consumer, but then go to a shop and have them help install it, you know, a person working in a shop isn't going to be familiar with every single, like, running board that comes across their their desk or their shop floor. So having a demonstrative video of how the brackets are aligned or, you know, what tricks are, you know, the best way to, you know, install anything.
Even though when you had a good a learning experience to how to implement the product, he might refer to it in the future again and buy it again or suggest it to a customer who's in the market for something like that.
Correct. Yes. Yes. It's all about that brand loyalty, right? You expect a certain level. You have to maintain that level.
Yes.
You know, it does make you work harder, but it's worth it in the end. Right?
And you also mentioned that they're more and more trying to set up their own web shops. Was there also an increase during the pandemic? Because also when we talked earlier, we talked about our similar endeavors with Shopify, for example, and the other platforms like the WooCommerce, etc. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So did you see an increase in that as well?
Yes. Well, I mean, it's always been...
because I know you are prepared for Shopify. You told me.
Well, we actually have plugins for three platforms, three e-com platforms, for WooCommerce, for Shopify, and for BigCommerce. And one of the reasons we did it, honestly, is because not only do we have small manufacturer, you know, companies, we have small reseller companies who are excited about the products. Like I said, their passion, there's a lot of passion over in those halls at the convention center. And so they're passionate about their segment. Maybe they're, you know, overlanders or they're drag racers. They all have their specialty.
Yeah.
And they want to sell the products of that specialty. But they're five people or sometimes one person. So they, you know, even in the specialty, you're looking at 20 to 30 brands. And that's a lot of data.
Yes.
To cull through and sort and load into your e-com stores. So that's why we developed the plugins for them. But again, I you know, push it to the pandemic. You know, it's like, I need an online store now, or else I don't get in front of anybody.
And saying, you know? I need an, you know, because we talked before and the guys were still thinking in paper catalogs, and then creating your own online store is like a complete different animal.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, but it's funny, for the for either the manufacturer or the reseller who are selling direct to consumer, as soon as they enter into that e-commerce world is when they realize,
that's convenient.
That's really convenient. And also, I want to work with brands that have their data together. They want to work with brands who have multiple images, who have multiple descriptions, who have their titles that make sense, who, you know, have their fitment information correct with whatever notes or qualifiers that help them sell the product better, right? All these things become under scrutiny when it's the only voice you have to speak to your end customers.
Yeah. Yes, sure.
So it's been, like I said, we have been very busy over the last 2 years.
Yes, I can imagine.
coming out of the pandemic.
But how far do you go now having these plugins? When I, as a distributor, I give you a call and say, Gigi, now I need to be online. I need to set up a e-commerce website. Mm-hmm. Can you help me? Do you do support in that regard as well?
Well, they need to pick a platform, obviously. Yeah. A lot of them pick the platform, one of the three that
yes,
I have.
Yes,
have,
sure. You cover mostly the entire market with these three.
But yeah, exactly. It's one of the reasons why we picked the three that we did.
Yeah.
And we can help them with the product information, and we can, but our plugin is not the website.
Yes.
Right? Our plugin.
But I guess that's also something you need to tell your customers, because they think, oh, there's a plugin, that's the website.
Constantly. It is a constant conversation. They call up and they're like, so can I, you know, change the
Where can I put my logo?
Yeah. I'm like, no. I feel sad for my developer because he's often the first
getting
contact
all his
sometime.
Tickets.
Yeah. I'm like, no. And I actually work with our project manager on it. I'm like, so that's a yes, that's a no, that's a no, that's a no, that's a yes. Because it's a plugin. It is an aspect. It's a solution. It isn't your entire website. And it's not your entire experience, right, with your consumer. So, you know, we do get resellers signing on that think they have a relationship with a major WD who can do the fulfillment for them, who has buying power for them. And so then that WD carries, you know, 1,000 brands, and they say, oh, that means I can sell 1,000 brands.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you can't sell 1,000 brands. It's like, why not? You don't know 4 million products, you know, in your head. You have to support all this information. When a consumer asks you about this line, do you know about that brand? It's like, oh, not really. Well, you know, do you know the way that they would be using it, or better ways that they can use it? No, it's a, you know, we're in the education game in the end, with a side of digital data.
Yes. And besides e-commerce, another big topic currently is the electrification. And I guess in the past, many people were thinking, oh, with electrification, especially like performance parts, would be a bump in the market. But then, like just yesterday, it was at SEMA. Yeah, it was at SEMA. I saw a Tesla Model S, and I didn't even recognize it. It looked like a Ferrari. So I went, what car is this? And then I saw it's a Tesla, because you saw the little T on the on the hood.
Uh-huh.
So I guess this is still a very big market. So it doesn't really matter for the performance parts or tuning parts.
Well, tuning parts maybe not, but you know. Certainly for those manufacturers who produce parts for internal combustion engines, it matters a lot.
Yes.
Right? That doesn't necessarily stop the other accessory manufacturers from entering the market. You know, I think of the Tesla. I'm in Southern California. And
Streets full of Teslas.
Yes. Oh my gosh. We have Teslas everywhere. And I think of them, honestly, like the Model T Fords, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
Where they all look alike. They're all the same color. And they all drive the same.
And I guess this is also a very important fact, because like a Tesla, you can only get it, I guess, in 4 colors.
Yeah. Well, Tesla changes the color options every, I don't know, few years. They'll add like one extra color and charge you exorbitantly for it. But it is so in our industry, it's like, I don't want to look like the other guy.
Yeah.
You know, or gal. I want to make my car look different. So
let's get it wrapped in camouflage.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So wraps were a huge thing, and it still is a huge thing. Wheels, a huge thing, right? But more now, it's like, well, can I change the profile? Can I change the shape of this Tesla? I love the platform. I love how it drives. I love how, you know, consistent I can expect its performance, but I want it to look different. Yeah. I want it to be different than a Tesla sitting next to me. So yeah, so now body parts are coming into play. The problem with that, well, I shouldn't say problem, it's a hurdle, is all the sensors, you know, all the cameras and sensors that have to be accommodated.
Yes, especially Tesla, because their autonomous driving is camera-based.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, I mean, there's so many ADAS technology in vehicles nowadays that almost every body modification requires a recalibration of those sensors and cameras. So that's probably the hurdle with some of the, you know, modifications. Some of the drivers, they're like, I don't care. I never use the autopilot anyway. I want to be in control anyway, so I don't care. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, and I also think in terms of electrification, maybe we have to rethink what a performance part is, because now when we're talking about performance parts, we're talking about something which makes your car faster or accelerating faster and stuff. But maybe in the future, when you have like this electric cars, maybe you choose performance parts which benefit your range or which extend your range.
Yes, absolutely. Range, I mean, you know, tires is still a performance upgrade when you're talking about electric vehicles versus a regular ICE vehicle. And, you know, I already mentioned wheels, but brakes, another one.
Yeah.
Just because the car is so much heavier, you know, they rip through the tires and they tear through brakes if they're not at the higher grade for stopping these heavier vehicles. So, you know, for us, it'll always be about making vehicles look better, you know, stop faster or whatever. But you're right. It could also mean now, you know, go further.
Definitely. And every time at the end of our little sessions here, we are looking ahead in the future. So in your opinion, what will be the topics we talk about when we meet again at Apex 2030, so in 8 years' time?
Oh, my Lord. 8 years' time?
Yes.
Usually people only ask for like 5 years. You're looking into the, you know, flying cars. This
I told you that the tough questions come at the end of the session.
It does come at the end. 2030. Wow. So in 2030, I can only imagine that...
Will you still have to explain the value of data?
Oh, good God, I hope not. I hope not. But you know what? I didn't think I'd be in the same conversation 20 years after I started the company, right? I'm still like, no, you need product data. What? What's the product data? Yeah. I can't believe I'm still having these conversations 20 years later. But... So 8 years from now, yeah, I'm sure that there will still be conversations about product data, but I think it'll be more about expanding that user experience, right? It won't be just that the basics, I'll just call it the basics. It's not just going to be about you need an image and a description and your product fitment, you know? That has been the conversation for the last 15 years. I think moving ahead and thinking ahead, it's going to be much more, I don't want to say virtual experience, but...
I mean, you guys in California, you will all be living in the metaverse by then.
My son has one of those
VR
Oculus, Oculus VR sets, but I think we're still a very tactile group of people.
Yeah.
And... So the simulated experience is good to understand how to manipulate in the environment, but in terms of like experiencing being actually in a vehicle, and I even think about the autonomy topic that you brought up. It's like, again, coming from the SEMA side, I don't know if you recently saw the Ken Block, they didn't call it Hoonigan.
The Gymkhana videos.
Yeah, it's the Gymkhana, but yeah. He recently did one going through the streets of Las Vegas.
Yeah.
In the Audi, oh my God, I can't think of the model. Brand new. But it's electric, full electric.
Okay.
You should watch the video.
Yeah, I will, for our listeners, I will put it in the show notes, the link to the
you
YouTube
should.
Video.
It's amazing. But it's an electric vehicle, and he's tearing through the streets of Las Vegas. I think he said he went through 40 sets of tires filming that video.
So it's the Audi e-tron GT or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Mm-hmm. The 800 horsepower and beautiful. So everyone wants that tactile experience, right? I don't think that watching the video was one thing, but I think being in the car would be 1,000 times better, right? And I think people still love that. I don't think autonomy is going to replace it. I think autonomous driving is great because it allows mobility to those that can't or have lost the ability to do it themselves. So it doesn't restrict them to their homes anymore. But, for our market, for the aftermarket, they want to be in control.
And I agree. So we'll meet at Apex 2030, and then two of us will drift through the strip.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun? Actually, if you go to SEMA, they used to have a drifting experience for the attendees.
Oh, okay.
You have to sign up and stand in line, but
nice.
But it was fun. I actually did it in 2019. I love it. So I'm on the fun side.
Great. Thank you very much for your time. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I hope we meet sooner than 2030.
I hope so too. Thank you, Christian.
Thank you.
Great episode today. It was a pleasure talking to Gigi. I hope it really came through how passionate she is about the whole data topic. Key takeaway from my side, and I really think it's a really important one. When talking about data, start from the use case or benefit it brings instead of talking about all the nitty-gritty detail upfront, both when selling it as well as promoting it within your organization. If you guys liked what you heard, feel free to give us a positive rating in your podcast app. If you want to learn more about Gigi or SEMA Data, you will find, as always, all the links in the show notes. So long, see you in the next one.